Hey, what's going on? This is the Educated Guest Podcast, and I'm Justin, your host. Hey, if this is your first time listening, I just want to say thank you for becoming a part of this community. Digging a little bit deeper into your educational journey so that you can transform. And it doesn't mean that you're going to become a new person, right? It means that you care enough about your development personally and professionally that you recognize a gap between where you are and where you want to be, wherever wanting to be actually is. So how do we view education? How do we view the art education system? How do we view design education? How do these things integrate? Well, the core belief that we start with is that, again, education should be transformational from the inside out as opposed to transactional, meaning from the outside in. There's no extra skill that you're missing. There's no extra tactic that's gonna make you 20% more on your salary or any of that stuff. Like, that's not what we're here to tell you. Like, there are other people who do that and focus on that, and that's not what we do. What we do is that we focus on three different segments or approaches to teaching that develops from the inside out. So it looks like this. Number one, we have our segment called Incomplete Thoughts. And this is all about the development of the mindset. You know, a lot of questions about self-doubt and self-belief and should I, could I, would I, what would happen if? Like, these are all indicators of a lack of confidence, or maybe just an insecurity, or maybe just needing an extra boost, or maybe they're indicators of arrogance. So what we're really trying to do is build that level of creative confidence before you even start talking about how to run a studio or how to get your art commissioned or how to find a patron or any of these sorts of things. So the second segment that we focus on, the second approach, is called work study. And this is where I'll share as much information as I possibly can about running a studio, getting clients, operating with clients, producing work, finding techniques. So this is tools, tactics, how-tos, that sort of thing. And then on Fridays, we have, and our last segment is called Well Read. And this is where we either bring in a guest for dialogue, or I'll just give a monologue about a person of interest or a subject of interest that I think most artists or multidisciplinarians should know about. So with that said, you can go to educated-guest.com and subscribe to our newsletter for more information. All right, so that's the intro. I always seem to outlast the intro music, but nonetheless, I figured all that information was important. Today, we're talking about the myth of expertise. And when you probably clicked on this episode, you were probably hoping for something a little short, something quick and to the point. I don't know if we'll actually achieve that goal, but I've got a number of things to say on this topic, most of which I think caters to the person who's trying to start their own studio, trying to quit their day job, or maybe you're just trying to get a job you love. You're tired of coming home every day at 5:30 or 6, whenever people come home, and just not liking what you're doing. Like, you will spend, for most people, will spend the majority of your time working for the rest of your life. So you might as well enjoy what you're doing every day. So there are some common limiting factors that people often place on their ability to make a difficult decision in their life. You know, whether you're in one of the three categories I just named, or if you're in category, invisible category number four, it doesn't really matter. There are many ways that limiting beliefs can rule your life. You know, the most common of which is, quote unquote, I don't know enough yet, or as I call it, the myth of expertise. And I'll definitely concede to the fact that patience is undeniably important and mentorship is undeniably important. However, it's important also to know what you're going after before you say that you're not ready to receive the thing you say you want. I'll say that again. So it's important to know what you're going after before you say that you're not ready to receive the thing you say you want. So my question to myself early, you know, in my more formative years, I guess, you know, early 20s and late teens is, you know, was so many different things that had nothing to do with the next question I'm about to ask is, what is it exactly that you're afraid to do? Or what is it exactly that you're afraid of? And a lot of times, no one teaches us how to daydream. No one teaches us how to dream, period. It's okay to dream. It's okay to daydream. But no one ever guide you all the way to the end of the dream, because inevitably you'll find some fear that you'll either ignore or you'll just stop daydreaming and think it's not meant to be. So, for example, your dream might be to be Adele and be, you know, for all intents and purposes of the last 10 to 15 years, one of the most iconic singers and songwriters of the last 10, 15 years. And you want to sing on stage, you want to sing in front of thousands and thousands of people, and you daydream about it in class, or you daydream about it at your job, or you go home and you write in your little book. And this is not denigrating those who have this path. This is just the truth. I know it's the truth. So you go home and you jot down your song ideas in a book, and for every once in a while you'll daydream and you'll get to the stage and you stop there. You don't go all the way through the visualization. You don't go all the way through the imagination. You just stop and say, all right, I made it when I can see the stage or whatever. And you never get deep enough to imagine the roadblocks of getting there, partially because of fear or partially because of not caring enough about the end result or not having enough clarity. So usually this fear, let's talk about where fear comes from, is, you know, it's popularly referred to from a place of lack, less, or never. And in either of these three states of mind, you'll never get what you want. Some examples are either, you know, lack of time, or I don't have enough money, or lack of energy. I won't be able to pay back the debt. I never have an opportunity to redeem myself if I fail in this. You know, I have less knowledge than the next person who's doing this thing. I have less experience than the next person who's doing this thing. And as we've talked about a few weeks ago in, you know, episode 123, I believe, 123, we talked about the spiral of positivity and negativity as being equally strong. So what that means is that you must pay attention to the way you speak to yourself. And whether you're Christian or not, the Bible has a pretty good, great way of summarizing some universal truths. You know, James chapter 3, again, this is a faith agnostic platform and community, so I'm not pushing anything on you. I'm sharing a publicly available story that I think most people can resonate with. So James chapter 3, if you're curious, talks about this idea of taming the tongue. And the quote goes like this: when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. And that's the end of the quote. So go check that out if you have a chance. I really think that you'll love that particular chapter and personally just that book in the Bible, if you're curious. So before we get into the details of why expertise is mythological to me, we have to understand this truth of small sparks starting a great forest fire. Small sparks starting a great forest fire. And the point of this episode, if you're wondering, because we've been talking roughly, you've been listening to me for just under 10 minutes or so, whether you're in the car, whether you're at the gym, you're trying to get, what is the nugget out of this? What are the two or three things out of this that you can pull away? And we're getting there in just a second. So the point of this episode and the point of this lecture is to help you understand the power of your small actions. So if you're at the gym, this might be directly applicable to you. If you're running, this might be directly applicable to you. If you're biking, if you're at the office in between calls, if you're in class, walking around campus, or if you're at your internship over the summer at some place you don't really want to work at full time, but you just did it anyway. Or if you're trying to figure out whether you even majored in the right thing, like all these different problems that people have on a regular basis, this is what we're here to talk about. So most people believe that you have to go and get a collection of certifications, skills, qualifications, etc. Then you'll be able to go to the market as a more validated version of who you currently are. You know, some people refer to this as the skills first approach. Skills first. And most people are blindly following the standard method, right? Like of just going to get 1 degree, 2 degrees, 3 degrees, 4 certifications, 5 certifications. And I've talked to people many times and helping them, advising them from a business standpoint and a strategic standpoint to shift up their offering a little bit to expand into a more lucrative market. And this was about a couple of week or so ago. And I was talking to them and they said, well, you need a certification to advertise yourself as that. Okay. Well, don't advertise yourself as that. Let's talk about other things that you can advertise yourself as. Because the last time I checked to give information about this, that, and third that isn't legally binding and it's just consultation, it doesn't matter whether you call it left, right, center, up, down, pink, blue, it doesn't matter. And I'm definitely not, I'm not a lawyer, but I've also worked in this field for long enough to know, you know, as long time is always relative, because I'll say something's a long time and then somebody will say, no, I've been working in it for 35 years. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, great. Awesome. But I've been working in it long enough to know what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. So anyway, some people refer to this as a skills first approach. I mentioned that already. So the interesting thing is that you can go about this a different way. And I found that there's three steps you can take immediately today to figure out whether you're ready to start a studio, whether you're ready for that job you say you love, or whether you're ready to quit your job and just do art full time. I always found it interesting to pick an industry first. This is step number one. So pick an industry or niche. Some people refer to it as a niche. So this might be fitness. This might be retail. This might be insurance. It doesn't quite matter what the industry is, and you don't even have to stick to it. But challenging yourself to operate from a constraint by picking a particular industry that you know, and it doesn't matter that you've worked in the industry for years and years and years. Like, say you're working at an ad agency right now and you've had 7 different clients, projects you've been a part of. One's like a beverage manufacturer. One is like they sell, you know, packaged goods, or they sell like beauty products. It doesn't matter. Like, find an industry that you feel at least confident talking about on Saturday at like 10 p.m. Like, find that industry and realize all the different facets that you can sort of plug in and play in that industry. And you don't have to stick to it. Like I said, I think it's just an interesting thought experiment to simplify whether you're ready or not, or what you need to do to get ready. So after you pick an industry, let's say that you chose, you know, home and garden. Like, most people are, you know, designers and they feel like they can make furniture, or they want to design like cups, or they want to design home products, or they want to design like landscapes, like those sorts of things. That's a good place to start. So I've already chosen that I want to do home and garden. And the next thing you want to do is to take this market first approach, take this like reverse approach. You want to go and you want to talk to them to find out what their problems are. Now, anytime you're starting a studio or you're starting sort of a practice that's independent, or if you're freelancing, like, this is sort of the person I'm speaking to. Or even if you are seeking a big time job at a firm that does these sorts of things, or at a company that sells these sorts of things. Like, I'm all about making things super simple so that you can get to the work. Like, at the end of the day, if you're working at Pentagram, if you're working at, you know, BBDO, if you're working at Ogilvy, a lot of these places that people are going after, like, the way they stack up their client portfolio is exactly how I'm describing it. They have industry sectors. They kind of do a cross section of industry and skill. And if you do that independently for yourself, then you plugging into somebody else's system is undeniably easier. And you operating your own studio, your own agency, is also easier, because you'll know what to offer and you'll know who to offer it to. Very simple stuff. It's like lemonade stand. Like, if you're set up a lemonade stand in the middle of a neighborhood where nobody drinks lemonade, or you haven't even asked people if they like orange juice with the pulp or without the pulp, and you've got a whole pulp orange juice stand in the middle of the neighborhood and people keep walking by and you're like, well, why ain't nobody buying my orange juice? It's like, bro, you never asked people what they liked, or you never told them why pulp is better. There's maybe health benefits to it, like the texture people are not fond of, but it's actually really cool. Like these weird things that you can come up with. And hopefully you're getting the parallel here between your work. You know, let's say you're a graphic designer, if you're a sound designer, if you're a motion graphic person, if you are an industrial designer, like these titles are a dime a dozen. There's millions of people on Dribbble and all these different sites, Behance, that advertise themselves as the same thing. So what makes you different? So pick a niche, talk to them, figure out what their problems are. And then three, ask them how much they would pay to solve their problem. And this is going to be a very casual conversation that usually takes place well before you're even talking about work, or even after they've even said they like your work. You know, the unfortunate part is it's not always about the work. Sometimes it's about the business value, particularly when the economy's down. No one's really just paying for, I've talked to a lot of friends about this, just gather some, you know, data, if you will, to see if I'm feeling the same thing or feeling the right thing. And nobody's really just out here paying for, you know, brand activations right now. Like people are interested in, if they're trying to activate a brand, then they have not as much clarity on the business as they wish they could, because brand activations when the market is down primarily is a, how do I want to put it? It's a very front of funnel metric to be tracking. It's like, you know, you're concerned with bottom line and you're concerned with revenue and conversion and all these sorts of things on the end of the funnel. And brand activations to me just boost the traffic, boost the amount of people showing up at your front door, and it boosts the conversation, it boosts the impressions, all these different metrics if you're into marketing and stuff like that, that people are keeping track of. But it's not so much about making money. And for a lot of new businesses, new studios and such, if you're not currently operating from a brand name source like a Pentagram, or if you haven't done a lot of work at that scale, the difficulty, people always talk about how it's difficult to start a business right now. Well, it's only difficult if you don't have a focus, or you're not willing to sacrifice a little bit of, you know, if you're not willing to sacrifice a little anonymity for some specificity to get to the point of what people are asking for. And when you ask them this, how much they would pay to solve their problem, it should be a very casual conversation. You're not trying to sell them or back end on or whatever. Like, you're just trying to gather data. You're trying to figure out, all right, for the thing that I can do, is this a, and I just like to use multiples of 10, is this a $1,000 problem? Is it a $10,000 problem? Is it a, you know, $50,000 problem? Is it a $20,000 problem? Like, these sorts of things will tell you generally what your value is. And you just kind of talk about it, and you can figure it out too without even asking people at times, because you can do a rough estimate and rough, you know, a little bit of math in your head to figure out, hey, well, how much does it cost them to do this internally? And then also, how much does this cost them if they don't do anything? And then how much will it cost them to do it with me? And what is the long-term cost? It's like the, you know, it's like having an asset that depreciates. It's like, what's the long-term costs and amortization of this quote-unquote problem? And how is it going to devalue the whole company if they don't do anything about it for in perpetuity? So this is like very business speak. So don't like latch onto this and be like, oh, this is confusing me, I'm going to turn this off. Like, just hear me out. You can come back to it, maybe listen to it again, and it might make more sense. But really, we're just talking about three things. Again, pick that industry, talk to them and find out where their problems are, and ask them how much they would pay to solve the problem. So a couple of takeaways for today, is where I want to wrap up here in a second, is I always thought to ask whenever I've taken on like freelance work, or, you know, trying to lock people down on a more retainer basis, I've always asked this question when I was first starting, and this could go all the way back to high school. I wish people would have told me this. It's like, hey, what is something that in your mind you could charge at least $2,000 a month for? What is something you could offer today? And I know it sounds crazy because everybody wants to do like a brand identity and have it shown in their portfolio, and nobody's paying for identities right now except to Pentagram, because they want Pentagram to help with a lot of promo and PR too, because if Pentagram does your identity, then it's chances are high you'll get featured in the design blogs and such, and then people will know what your business is. So there's a whole game to it. But to operate outside the game and sort of play the game within the game, just focus on the dollars and cents for a little bit. Like during this time, if you're uncertain about those first three things, like starting your own studio, quitting your day job, getting a job you love, the first step to reclaiming sort of your creative power is to understand your value. And because in most cities in the US in particular, you need about $2,000 to live every month. I know that's really high or really low to some people. Some people are in New York, like, oh, well, I need like $15,000 to live every month. Or there's people in wherever saying, man, that's too high. But let's just say that you need $2,000 a month. And let's just say that you want to work full time doing your thing. What in the world do you do that you can charge $2,000 for per month, every month? Or what could you charge for a setup fee? What could you charge for a maintenance fee? And then what could you charge for a daily fee? Like, what are your fees? And I think that was the thing that for a while had me, just hung up on. Yeah, I was still thinking about like charging $200, $500. This is just like side money for little projects people would ask me to do. And I'd be like, man, like, don't they know that this is worth so much more? They just don't understand how much work. They'll see it one day down the road. No, it's like, start saying it now. But after you do a couple, like, just raise your prices and see what happens. I know there's a lot more nuance there, so don't just go and say, I'm $10,000, $15,000 an hour or a month. It's like, okay, well, how did you get there? So just start with $2,000. Just figure out what could you do to just cover your expenses, period, just to break even. And I think that would be a good jump off point. Number two, who off the top of your mind would be able to get, could you get a meeting with this week? Like who could you get a meeting with this week? Who could you talk to this week and really, really dig into the service that you could offer and what it could do for their business? And then number three is what industry or service, and these are the two sort of like niches you could get in or specialties. Like if you do logos, okay, and you don't want to do anything else except logos, then let's say you're the logo person for every industry. And then likewise, if you do branding, well, that's pretty broad. So you might want to say, I do branding for beverage shops. So I'm trying to say basically coffee shops, but you know, there's also bubble tea, boba tea, all these different things, smoothie places. So there's a lot of different ways you can sort of specialize and sort of cross-section your studio to just get started with something. But also, don't discount the fact that you can lead with the type of work that you want to do. So the last thing I'll just leave with is this. You might be asking yourself after listening to, roughly 30 minutes of this, if you're suggesting that you're saying start a business. This is probably, maybe this is what you're thinking. You know, if you're anything like me, it's like, okay, this guy's talking about business. He's saying a lot of things about 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. You know, is it really that simple? You know, I thought I needed to be a trusted advisor or an expert to sort of do this whole studio thing or even go after the job I wanted or go after promotion or whatever it is. And I'm here to say that the truth is that it's not really about becoming an expert. It's simply about becoming better at something than your client is and knowing just enough to solve their problem. It's not about becoming the best immediately. Like, of course, that's an advantageous goal, but nobody ever is, and this was a frustration for me, nobody talks about the in-between, about being excellent in between. Everybody just says, all right, well, here's Michael Jordan and here's you in middle school. And you're like, all right, well, is there any stat that I should be keeping in like 10th grade basketball? Like what should I be doing around 10th grade? It's like, no, here's Michael Jordan and here's you in middle school. And that's the most demoralizing thing possible to most people is like, all right, well, I'm not Michael Jordan and I don't know what the path is to be Michael Jordan. I just see him way over there and I'm way over here. So it's not going to be any close. Like, so why do this? And that's, again, like this myth of expertise. So what I'm here to give you is sort of that 9th, 10th, 11th grade sort of level of getting started, get your feet wet, like playing AAU in the summer, like that sort of mentality about your work so that you can go about it in a very, very interesting way. So this isn't really like a shady activity or unethical if you are simply solving a problem for your client. Like some people's problem is that, you know, they don't know how to run Instagram. They don't know how to post stuff. They don't know how to manage their social media. They don't know how to make an ad. They don't know how to, and maybe they do, but they just, the time it would take them to figure it out would be, let's say, 2 weeks and you can do it in 2 hours. They don't need to know that it takes you 2 hours, nor does it matter and nor does it devalue you. You know, like let's think about a car mechanic. Like, would you pay the car mechanic that comes and fixes, you know, your transmission in 20 minutes less than you would pay the car mechanic who would take 2 hours to fix it? Would you? Probably not. So why would you expect clients to devalue what you do if it takes you a shorter amount of time? So again, focus on the value you're providing, the problem you're solving. And I just in closing, this is the myth of expertise and the never ending story of your eternal life. There's no point of arrival, quite frankly. So you must understand the nuances of riding the wave along the journey. That's all I have for today. Hopefully you enjoyed this. Hopefully it was very informative. Maybe it's a good start to your day. Maybe it's a good ending to your day. Maybe it's not exactly all the things that are pointed directly at you, but you can just get a good thought pattern going and some good thought momentum going, and hopefully you're well on your way for the day. I'll talk to you soon. Peace.